in this episode.
But in terms of high performance in general, I mean, a lot of high performing women who are, in my opinion, over-exercising, they will actually lose their periods, because what happens is, for women, if cortisol levels are elevated, the enzymes that help produce progesterone, which is the hormone that causes the period to happen and helps hold pregnancies, the enzymes shift to help produce more cortisol, and the amount of progesterone decreases. So they actually will lose their periods often.
Learn to perform. Practical lessons so that you can immediately learn to optimize your health, happiness, and performance. Welcome to another episode of Learn to Perform. I'm your host, Braden Ostepchuk. Today's interview is one that I am really excited for, because I will have the opportunity to ask a lot of questions and learn about a topic that I am not well versed in, and that is naturopathic medicine. A few specific topics we will get into include HPA axis dysregulation, IBS, and female hormones. All right, so today's guest is Dr. Amanda Shea, a naturopathic physician and owner of the Naturopath Clinic in Roslyn, BC. As a naturopathic physician with experience treating hundreds of patients, Amanda is an expert in achieving optimal health through a natural approach to living, something that I am a big believer in. Prior to her four-year medical degree, she completed pre-medical studies and a degree in psychology at the University of Regina in Saskatchewan. With this combination of a love of medicine, psychology, and nature, she was driven to a career in naturopathic medicine. In addition to her naturopathic medical training, she also has advanced training and certifications in the following: pharmaceutical prescription rights, acupuncture, IV inhalation therapy, and advanced cardiac life support. On top of that, Amanda also has her own supplement company, Enliven Naturals, and I'm actually taking the Complete Calm supplement right now. So let me just get that in the camera for those that are going to watch this here. We'll definitely add links and everything into the show notes and onto the website so everyone can find out more about that later. And on top of all of that as well, Amanda is also a business consultant who helps wellness providers diversify income and help more people. She has had her work featured in Medium, Thrive, and The Female Hustlers. Her social media presence and engagement is world-class. And of course, like I said, I'll provide links to everything in the show notes. And finally, one last thing, Amanda just so happens to be my cousin, so I might be a bit biased, but her resume speaks for herself, so she is a phenomenal resource. And Amanda, thank you so much for coming on. I can't wait to learn more about everything you're doing.
Oh yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I'm happy you said we're cousins, because I wasn't sure if you were going to say that or not. So
Yeah, I had to build up the suspense first though and save it for the end. I didn't want to lead in with that, because then people might think that I'm biased. But if I lead in with all of your credentials at the start, then it seems like I've lightened the blow a little bit. At least that's what I hope. But now it's all for naught, because I just spilled the beans. So
that's okay. The one thing, can I correct you on one thing about your intro?
Yes.
It's because I realize now, because you said you grabbed it from my website, that it's a little bit old. So now I've been in practice for like almost 4 years. So I've treated thousands of patients.
Thousands. Okay. Yeah. You know what? I was thinking 100 seemed a little low. Okay.
That was when I first graduated. So.
Okay, good. Well,
that's good to know. Note for myself.
I was going to say, maybe write that down. You shouldn't change that one word. Okay, so thank you for clarifying that. And that gives much more credibility today. So this is good. So I wanted to start off really quick, high level summary. What is naturopathic medicine? Because even up until probably this year, when I started exploring it more and trying to understand what exactly naturopathic medicine is, I had no idea. And I think my initial preconceptions were way off. And I think a lot of people probably don't really know what that is. So I would love for you to just lay out for everyone, what exactly is naturopathic medicine?
Yes, totally. I love that you asked this question, because it is something people still say to me. They think that naturopaths are just like, you know, have crystals. They're like waving over people, like offering these magic cures. And that is not naturopathic medicine. The way that I was trained in BC, in British Columbia, where I live, is we're primary care physicians. So I can actually write prescriptions, lab requisitions, x-ray requisitions, like ultrasound requisitions. So it's basically like a GP. However, I like to focus on the root cause of what's going on. So I look a lot at diet, lifestyle. I like using herbs and more natural treatments first, but I do also prescribe pharmaceuticals for patients. So it's a lot more kind of evidence-based with that historical kind of combined. And the other common misconception is that naturopathic doctors are homeopaths, or that we all practice homeopathic medicine. But the truth is, a lot of us don't. It's not something that we use at all. So it's just kind of interesting. There's like these two different, in the naturopathic community right now, there's like these two different kind of forces happening. But most of us are trained in more of a modern way. And that, again, we're just more kind of primary care providers with spending a lot more time with patients and focusing more on diet, lifestyle.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good clarification, because the whole idea of having the crystals is, like you had mentioned, was something that's what always came to my mind first, was voodoo magic, perhaps. Yes. And you just, what exactly are they doing? But it really is science and evidence based.
Yes.
At least kind of my way of looking at it is, instead of prioritizing artificial treatment modalities, mm-hmm. so whether that be through artificial or synthetic medications or et cetera, we are looking at what is the natural lifestyle choices that we can make, and how can we implement our human biology and our physiology to optimize our health. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
Yep, totally. And then also, like, instead of just saying, okay, so you have like diabetes, let's treat you with this. It's like, why do you have diabetes? Like, it's really down and figuring out why is this happening? And I'm working our way up. I always call it the top down, bottom up approach, where I'm using herbs and things to help with symptoms or like nutrients, et cetera, but also working with like diet lifestyle so they can actually kind of heal on a deeper level, I guess, and have more control in their health.
Right. I love that. So it's the idea of, hey, something is wrong with your health. Something is not optimal in how you're living. Let's address the root cause rather than put on a band-aid treatment. So rather than treat the symptoms, let's treat the cause and let's resolve the issue so that you can be healthy, instead of just tolerating it with, you know, extended medication or what have you. Okay, excellent. So that's a great overview. So I hope people can really kind of understand as the framework of when we get into different things in this conversation. But before we get into the really specific topics I mentioned at the start, I want to ask you about high performance. Mm-hmm. And this is something actually you talked a little bit about right before we hopped on this call. It's a little bit different for everyone, and I like getting people's opinions, but how do you define high performance, or what does a high performance human look like?
So this has changed so much throughout my life. Like, if you asked me when I was in school, I'd be like, oh, it's someone that gets like the best grades and makes a lot of money, et cetera. But now it's like, for me, the ultimate high performer is someone that has been able to create the life that they want and have time to enjoy that life without burning out. That to me is like high performance.
I love that. So I think I saw this on your website. Hopefully this is still up to date. Live better, longer.
Yes.
Right? Exactly. So not just are we increasing your lifespan, but your health span and your vitality and allowing you whatever your definition of fun, joy, happiness, performance is in any context, any type of career.
Yes.
We want to make you be the best at it, enjoy it the most for as long as possible.
Yes, exactly.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. One thing I commonly see with patients, and even just like growing up, it's like my parents are always working towards retirement, and same with patients are always working towards retirement. And then guess what? A lot of patients, they retire and then they get really sick, or they injure themselves, or all of these, something comes up that affects all of these plans they had that they waited their whole life to do. So it's like, well, how can we shift our perspective and be doing those things that we love to do while still helping other people and, you know, just being the best that we can?
Awesome. I love that. So that is actually a perfect segue into the first thing I wanted to talk about, because I want to talk about one of your specialties, which is HPA axis dysregulation. Now, I briefly did an episode on breathing, and I briefly talked about HPA axis and its role in hormones and stress management. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I think this was a good segue is because you're talking about how can we make things sustainable for people. And if you are, let's say, chronically stressed, or if maybe you are misguided in your pursuits and your passions, you may be pursuing something greater and chasing your dreams and goals, but you may actually be hindering your ability to perform and achieve those results. Like you said, if you're just grinding, working relentlessly for that retirement, and then you get there and maybe it's not all that you thought it was going to be. So I'd love for you to just start off with a high level overview. What is HPA axis dysregulation? What is the HPA axis? What do we need to know about it? Why does it matter? And then we can dive into some more specific questions after that.
Okay, perfect. So HPA axis dysregulation is more of the medical term for kind of adrenal fatigue. Adrenal fatigue is something that's thrown out a lot, but that it's not accurate. The adrenal glands do not get fatigued. That's not what happens. What happens, so basically the signal from your brain, the hypothalamus to the pituitary, which is another kind of endocrine, kind of the master endocrine gland in the brain, to the adrenals, which is what controls our stress response, that will become a little bit dysfunctioned if you're chronically stressed. So basically, if you're always pumping out cortisol, your brain essentially sends a signal to your adrenal glands, like, we cannot be pumping out all this cortisol, and then it down-regulates the amount of cortisol. And that will lead to going from feeling like on the verge of burnout, where you're really anxious, tired but wired, have really hard time sleeping, to the crash where you're burnt out, where cortisol is typically low. And then you're really low motivation, can't get out of bed, feeling really low moods. So that's kind of how that works. It's basically you overwhelm your body and your brain says, we can't be doing this anymore. And then it just downregulates that signal. So you're not producing as much cortisol.
Right. Okay. And so then that is a problem because then your entire hormones are out of whack. And I this is something that I've had a hard time trying to understand because you think cause and effect. And I see myself, oh, I'm tired. I'm lazy. I think, oh, I must just have been the sleep. Like it couldn't have been that assignment I was thinking about the other night. It's hard for us, I think, to connect the dots between what are the things in our life that are causing us stress and how that's actually affecting the endocrine response and then actually affecting it downstream. So in what ways do you see certain stressors in life or common stressors and how they may be kind of neglected because, well, oh, well, maybe it's this diet is happening, or maybe, you know, this is the reason that you're tired and stressed out, but maybe we need to take that step back to the beginning and say, well, what is causing your stress in the first place? I don't know. That was kind of an awkward question, but maybe you could just elaborate a bit.
Yeah, I kind of get what you're saying. So basically the way that our bodies are designed is, so I live in bear country. So if you see a bear out in the woods, your cortisol spikes, your blood pressure increases, your heart starts pumping harder. All of the blood shunts away from your like internal organs, digestion, et cetera, to your extremities. So you can run away. That is just, we're totally desired to see a threat, and the threat is usually life-threatening and our body responds to that. But what's happening is we're like, okay, we get in a fight with a colleague at work. We are late on an assignment. We have a project due. We took on too many clients, like whatever it is, our body still responds in the same way as if we are about to die. So that's, yeah. So we're stuck in traffic. Like these are just really common things that are happening on a day-to-day basis. And if people aren't aware of that and not reacting in such a strong way, it's just going to ramp up that whole system. And not only just for dysregulating the rest of our sex hormones, but also cortisol helps manage inflammation. And inflammation is the most common cause of almost all of our chronic conditions, right? So if your cortisol levels are dysregulated, and if they're either too high or too low, you've lost that protective mechanism from cortisol for inflammation. So then you're putting yourself at risk for lots of different chronic diseases and autoimmune diseases. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Inflammation is definitely everything. And in all of the uneducated research that I have done as an independent, you know, passion researcher, I always come across inflammation as a root cause of so many issues. And I like what you were talking about, the idea of the life-threatening, and there is a bear, for example. Yeah. You know, our bodies weren't designed to take our argument with our colleague at work as a life or death situation. Exactly. Right. And I think this kind of ties into, I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about the autonomic nervous system and the idea of what you were describing is the sympathetic response. So the sympathetic nervous system, flight or flight response, high stress, you know, increases certain hormones that our body is able to react and perform as needed for our survival in that situation. Yeah. But if you are chronically in a sympathetic state, you know, you shouldn't, there is no history where humankind has been chronically running away from bears. There's always some point where you can downregulate and then you activate the parasympathetic system. So would you mind just talking a little bit more and help clarify for people the difference between those systems and why it's so important for us to not just downregulate the sympathetic nervous system and not have that turned on all the time, but also ways to activate the parasympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. And maybe what are some techniques then that we can do? Let's say you're stressed out and you're sitting in traffic. What are some ways that you can cut back on the sympathetic response and then activate the parasympathetic response instead?
Right. So like the autonomic nervous system is just basically how our hormones and bodies functioning without our direct input. So it's so if we see a bear, our body automatically has that response. We don't tell it to have that response. So that's the autonomic. The autonomic has a sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. So the sympathetic nervous system, like I said, like we get ourselves into these situations, but our body automatically does it because that is how we were just evolved as humans, right? But I like your point about the parasympathetic because we can actually, with certain techniques, help bring that parasympathetic state a lot more often. And you talk about it a lot on your Instagram feed, but it's like breathing techniques. I always tell people just taking like 5 minutes, like to do nothing if you're feeling really ramped up, just anything that we can do to tell our bodies that we're safe. So relaxing, baths, calming activities. A common thing I see, especially with high performers, especially in the place that I live in, because people are always so active, is over-exercising. That really stimulates sympathetic nervous system. So if you're doing like hardcore activities more than 30 to 45 minutes a day, you're actually pumping up cortisol more, which is wreaking more havoc on that system than actually taking time to relax and do more calming activities.
Right. So it's one of those less is more situations.
It's one of those balance. If there's one thing I could say, it's all about balance. Like anytime the people that come to see me that have some sort of chronic illness, they're either like too high performing or too, like there's too much of something. Like they're either working too much, exercising too much, like eating too much of the wrong foods. Like it's all about too much. If anyone could do anything, it's just like about balancing things. Like just like balance is the key to a long, healthy life, I think.
I love that. And probably to a much happier life. Because if you are obsessed with fitness, for example, and you deprive yourself of some of your favorite foods, or you go out with your friends or go out to dinner, you know, perhaps in a post-COVID world or pre-COVID world, or you know, maybe it's a takeout dinner or something, and you constantly deprive yourself of that snack or of that treat, you know, that also is going to wreak havoc on your psychological health, right? So, I mean, if you're not achieving the balance one way or another, you are going to be interrupting your natural state and your ability to perform and be happy. So,
I see this with weight loss too. Sorry, I just want to say this quickly.
Please add in.
I see this weight loss too, is people will be like, hey, I'm only eating 1200 calories or less, and I'm, or even less than 1000 calories, and I'm exercising all the time, but I'm still not losing weight. And it's like, well, you're telling your body that you're not safe, and it's not safe for you to be losing weight right now. So your body literally like holds on to that weight, and you're increasing inflammation, which throws everything else off. So,
right. It's so interesting when you start to think about things in terms of how the body is responding, or how the body is, let's say, as an intelligent machine of its own, how it thinks about what's going on, saying, wait a minute, I am in a state of borderline starvation. So no, I am going to preserve my body fat at all costs because I need it, as opposed to the counterintuitive approach where you're like, well, if I eat more, I'm not going to gain weight. But you know, it's never, I think, such a black and white, if I do X, I will get Y. Or if I do A, I'll get B. I think people need to realize that the system is extremely complex, but it's also a holistic. Everything is interconnected. And that's why I've really come to appreciate and love naturopathic medicine, because really what it is you are trying to understand a system. It's a systems approach to healing your body. It's not just saying, okay, well, you have diabetes, so we're going to give you this as your treatment and that's it. Because it's not that simple. Like, I mean, any type of symptom you have, you're tired and you're lethargic and you can't get out of bed in the morning. Oh, well, maybe you didn't sleep enough at night. Well, maybe that's true, but it could also be 1,000 other things from 1,000 other steps that all contribute to each other.
Maybe you didn't have enough protein the night before with dinner and your blood sugar dropped and that caused cortisol to spike.
Right, exactly. So just trying to think about the natural approach. Yeah. I love, there was a quote I was listening to. I think I was listening to a podcast with Stephen Kotler, and he does the Flow Research Collective. And this actually just popped into my head. And he was talking about his definition of peak performance. Is peak performance is when you allow your body to do what it was designed to do instead of working against you.
Yes.
And that's what I kind of think about what this whole approach is. If we're talking about a natural lifestyle, we're really just trying to facilitate our body to do what it has been designed to do for thousands or millions of years. We're trying to just help it out. We're trying to get out of the way. Less human intervention and more just our body knows really well how to operate. Let's just let it do its thing.
Exactly. Exactly. But our whole like North American kind of attitude to life and success is totally completely opposite from that.
Right. It is 100% all out. You have to be the best at everything. And if you're not working 100 hours a week, you'll never last in Wall Street. You know, it's the Wolf of Wall Street mentality kind of thing, which is really though counterintuitive, because you see a lot of those people burn out.
Yeah.
And then they don't last. And then all of a sudden you get to the end and, or, you know, maybe just somewhere later in the journey and realize that maybe this wasn't actually what I would define as high performance or happiness or health, right? I mean, I've tried to build up my platform around the three pillars of health, happiness, and performance, but you need to have all of them. Like, you can't be a high performer and be happy if you don't have health. You know, that's the foundation. You know, it's great. Like, so maybe you could be super, super healthy and you're in the gym every day and you're training and you're peak condition and you're super high performer. But if you're not happy, I mean, what's the point? So it's kind of finding an interesting balance. So I think I'd like to shift gears a little bit here. And the next one I wanted to talk about was IBS and diet and gut issues. So it's a little bit of a curveball here. We're switching it up, but this is one of your areas of expertise as well. You do a lot of treatments with people in this. And honestly, I don't know that much. So I would love for you to just kind of lead in what is it you do, and we can take it from there.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, the reason why, when you're kind of asking what I see the most, like I live in a small town, so I see everything, but the most common thing people come to see me for are stress, anxiety, burnout, digestion, like IBS, and then hormones. So that's why I was like, these are the three things I think we should talk about. But
well, yeah, perfect.
Yeah. In terms of IBS, I mean, there's a couple different types. So IBS is typically, so there's constipation, diarrhea, or alternating constipation, diarrhea. And it's when people are getting a lot of gas, bloating, pain. Like I said, constipation, diarrhea, or both, but they don't have any signs of like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's or any autoimmune component happening with that. It's super, super common. The four most common causes of that I see in my clinic are SIBO, so small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, fungal dysbiosis, so if there's a bit of like a yeast imbalance in the colon, low enzymes or low stomach acid, hydrochloric acid, which just makes your body not able to break the food down properly, and that causes a lot of bloating. And then food intolerances. So sometimes people are eating foods kind of over and over and over again, and they're just causing more inflammation to the system. And just by removing those for a few weeks and just kind of rebalancing, again, balance, like just kind of shifting how we think about that food and how often we're consuming that food, that can also get rid of a lot of digestive symptoms. So.
Right.
And stress plays into all of that.
Right. Of course, stress plays into everything. So when you have a patient come in and they have some of those symptoms, what is the process for diagnosing? Is that through lab testing? I mean, if you're talking everything from, you know, fungal dysbiosis, or if you're talking about, that's a tough one. You really put me on the spot here.
Yeah.
You know, or you're looking at the microbiome. I mean, what are ways that you go about assessing this? Because there are so many different symptoms. They could have so many different causes. They could also be influenced by stress and by all these other factors.
Yeah.
So what does your process look like in terms of perhaps, maybe this is not the best way of saying it, but reverse engineering the symptoms to find out what the root cause is?
Yeah, for sure. So like, because I've seen like thousands of patients, I see the same patterns over and over and over again, if that's what's going on with the person. So honestly, like there's so many different functional medicine tests you can do, but those get into like the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I tend to just start based on the patterns that I've seen over and over. And very rarely I need to go do extra testing, but basically with SIBO, and SIBO is basically too much bacteria in the small intestine. And then you start fermenting, breaking down foods in the small intestine that aren't necessarily supposed to be broken down there. And that's when you get a lot of gas, bloating. People tend to have where they feel like they're like 6 months pregnant, like they get really, really bloated. They're worse with foods that are high in fiber. So raw foods, like if someone's like, I'm eating really healthy, but I feel worse. It's like, okay, are you eating a lot more raw foods? Are you eating a lot more fiber? Those people are usually better with antibiotics, worse with probiotics. So those are kind of the main things I'm looking for that. So if someone comes in and said, everyone told me to do probiotics and I tried it, it made me worse. Or people were telling me to use Metamucil and I tried it, it made me worse. That makes me think SIBO. Fungal dysbiosis is, it used to be called like Candida. And I don't really like Candida is one of the fungal species. And I don't like, I'm not a huge fan of like Candida diets and all of that stuff. But basically, fungal dysbiosis is typically in the large intestine. You can also have SIFO, which is fungal dysbiosis in the small intestine, but that gets really complicated. But for those people, it's typically worse with sugar, better with probiotics, worse with antibiotics. And like history of like chronic like yeast infections or like balanitis or a certain like, or fungal like athlete's foot, like certain kind of fungally things or other rashes. And then like low enzymes, there's typically a lot more kind of like burping, reflux, those types of things happening with that, along with the gas, bloating. And usually people will say, I feel like things are just not digesting, like they're just sitting up here. So that's more of an enzyme picture. And then the food intolerances is like, it's people come in and they're like eating the same thing over and over and over again. And when they pull that food out, they feel better. And that's kind of the way that I diagnose that.
Right. So for that last one, we come back to balance. I mean, and this is something I had to learn the hard way. I was eating peanut butter pretty much every day and I love peanut butter, but I realized that, you know what? Every day of something is probably not necessarily the best way. So incorporating some balance, but do you think of some of the drivers then that you see or some of the foods to avoid? I know you had mentioned certain raw foods and certain foods that are really high in fiber in specific cases, obviously, but also, you know, high sugar foods. Are there certain food groups that you consistently see as causing problems and foods that if the general population were to remove or at least reduce in some capacity would almost, I don't want to say certainly, but would likely already start to see some sort of improvements in their general health?
Yeah, totally. So the one thing I just wanted to say there about, and sorry, I feel like my mouth is dry. I'm just talking so much already. So it's only like 10.
That's because I've been putting you on a spot with tough questions.
That's okay. Usually I talk all day long though. I don't know. Probably because I had a sneaky coffee this morning. It makes me a bit funny. The one thing I was going to say, so when I'm talking about those things, so it's interesting the way that you kind of interpreted that. You're like, okay, so if they have SIBO, they shouldn't eat raw foods. No, that's not what I'm saying. if they have SIBO, you need to treat the reason why. So they have too much bacteria in the small intestine. So you need to treat that imbalance so that they can eat raw foods.
Right. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So you're saying the raw foods are causing a problem because there's already an underlying issue. So let's go one layer deeper, figure out what the underlying issue is so that you can actually eat the raw foods that are good. Okay. Okay. Sorry. I'm glad you add that in.
Yeah. And then in terms of foods, and like I said, just because I've treated so many patients now, the two biggest foods I see that cause the most problems in North America are gluten and cow dairy. So gluten just causes a lot, like intestinal permeability in a lot of people, which basically means the cells in the intestines gap a little bit. And then proteins from all the food you're eating are leaking out into the bloodstream before they're completely broken down. And then your body says, wow, what is this? We don't recognize this. And then it creates this kind of inflammatory response. And that's what causes all those symptoms. And then cow dairy has casein and whey. Those are the two different proteins. Casein has A1 and A2, and A1 tends to be more inflammatory than A2, which is more of like, I don't want to say anti-inflammatory, but it's less inflammatory. So goat and sheep cheese have way more of that A2. So what I try to have people do is like 80-20. So 4 or 5 days a week, keep gluten and dairy out of the diet. The other couple of days you can have it. And I find that I would say that probably helps like 95% of people. Just that one change alone. And usually I don't like really strict elimination diets. So usually what I'll have people do if I think that, and to be fair, a lot of people now come to me and they're like, okay, I'm already avoiding gluten and dairy, but I'm still having these symptoms. That's when it's like, okay, SIBO, fungal dysbiosis, enzymes. But gluten and dairy are kind of the main ones I see in terms of like food intolerances that are kind of causing stress to the system.
Right. Okay. I love that you actually brought that up. So I recently read the whole thing, The Plant Paradox by Stephen Gundry. And he talks about how lectins are really hard on the gut and gluten being one of the big ones. And I know a lot of people are, you know, it's almost a polar fight about gluten. Like, oh, people are exaggerating gluten, or people aren't exaggerating gluten, or, you know, what is a gluten intolerance, or do you have it? But I think I like that you brought that up, because even if you aren't celiac, or even if you don't have a gluten intolerance, like, gluten is still hard on the gut. And I think there is a lot of research that shows that. And it's because of the mechanisms, like you said, because of the protein that it is, and it's hard to digest. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because I have, you know, consistently found that in my personal experience, when I take gluten out, so basically I take grains out, I do feel a lot better.
Yeah.
That diet. And of course, there could be a lot of other contributors to that. And the other thing that I'm really glad that you brought up, the whole concept of cow dairy, and specifically cow dairy, because I have had eczema for most of my life, and I have noticed it in periods of time where I would increase dairy consumption, get worse and get less. And I know it is one of the most common situations, but I didn't understand the mechanism. So if you don't mind just kind of walking me through this again, and especially for people that need to know. So the biggest difference between the cow dairy and then dairy, let's say from sheep or goats, is the protein composition. So you're saying the A1 and A2 protein, and that's within casein?
So there's casein and whey are the two main proteins in dairy.
Okay.
And casein has A1 and A2. Okay. So there, I think it's also, there's another type of cow that, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's like one cow, I don't know what it's called, like a variety or whatever, that is higher in A1 than the other cows. And that cow is more prominent in like Europe. Goat and sheep have more of the A2.
Okay.
But yeah, dairy is really common to trigger inflammation in the system. And especially with eczema, because I see eczema a lot, it's like, I was compared to a bucket. So if your bucket's here and then all of a sudden it's overflowing, that's when you're going to have symptoms. So when I'm talking about reducing these inflammatory foods, it's like, so we can get your bucket down here so you can still enjoy things that you like without it overflowing and causing the symptoms. Yeah.
So moderation and balance again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Okay. Excellent. So if they, okay, so you kind of, it actually answered the question that I was about to ask. And that's the idea of, what do we do in place then of gluten, or in place of cow's dairy? So obviously the goal isn't necessarily to replace them. It's to properly balance them. So to reduce them. But for people that perhaps need to get them down to really low levels and are really struggling with that removal of foods in their diet, what do you think about, I mean, you suggested goat and sheep milk as well, or goat and sheep dairy. But what about alternatives for gluten that are appropriate for people that can still be really beneficial if they really feel like they need those same foods? Yeah. Like, is just having a gluten-free product, is that good enough? Or are there other mechanisms of food processing that make it, you know, maybe a concern in some way? I mean, what does that
whole
look like?
Whole foods, and that's I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a huge, I don't want to say issue, but like something I see very commonly is people are like, okay, well, like I now, let's say, for example, don't eat meat, but now they're having all this processed food and feeling worse, you know? And it's like, okay, you can't just substitute a whole food for a processed food and think that you're going to feel better. That's not the way it works. So still focusing on whole grains. So like oats are gluten-free, quinoa is gluten-free, amaranth's gluten-free. There's so many different kind of grain options you can use in place of gluten grain. So it's just replacing one kind of whole grain with another whole grain.
Right. And so the whole idea is that it has a different protein composition.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be digested and absorbed differently, which is why you're going to see benefits in how you feel and with your digestion when you make that switch to a gluten-free product. And I think that's important because I don't think a lot of people, myself included, really understand what exactly is gluten and why gluten-free matters or anything.
And there's, there are these IgG antibodies as well. So an IgE reaction is more of an anaphylactic reaction that people would get if they had peanuts. And it's more of an immediate reaction. IgG is delayed response to a certain protein in food. So people that are sensitive to the gluten protein will, that can, it, basically what happens when your body sees it, it increases the antibodies towards that food, which increases inflammation. But those can be controlled. So by reducing the amount that you're having, your body's not going to react the same way when it's introduced to that protein. Right. So there's different mechanisms about why it affects some people, not others. And like people with celiac disease, for example, they cannot have any gluten because gluten, our intestines are basically like, if you think about a shag carpet all rolled up. So we have all these little microvilli. That's what helps us absorb our nutrients. So people with gluten intolerance, their microvilli are fine. They just have some gapping between the cells of the intestines. People with celiac disease, the gluten proteins actually destroy their microvilli, so they can't absorb vitamins and minerals. So there's so many things to think about. And so it really depends on what's going on with you. And like someone with celiac has different symptoms than someone with gluten intolerance. And it is completely different. Like if someone's like, I have celiac, that's very different than someone that has gluten intolerance.
Right. Okay. So again, it's looking at the root cause and it's an individualized approach to medicine because you can't just slap a treatment onto a symptom. You know, you can't just say, oh, you have this issue, take this, because it has to be your specific situation and your each human body and each human is a very complex and unique system, right? So it's almost like you have to go on this whole little adventure and this mining exploration every single time you have a new patient, because you see the trends, which are great that we can talk about trends and help as many people as possible on a mass scale make the most, you know, the most effective changes to improve their life. But at the same time, that isn't, you know, it's a blanket advice. It's not going to address everyone and you have to really nail it down, but
for sure. And it's like, what else is causing inflammation? Like if you're reacting to cow dairy and that's causing inflammation, but you also have chronic stress that's causing inflammation, it might actually be that decreasing the stress will be more help. If you decrease the stress a lot, you could actually tolerate the dairy more. So there's so many different things.
Yeah. Because they all have different weightings too. Yeah. And I just want to quickly touch in a little bit about the idea of processed foods. Cause I love that you brought that up and I've experimented with different diets. I've experimented with, I say a whole food plant-based diet because I didn't want to say a vegan diet because I think it's important to note that you can be vegan and still eat a lot of processed foods. Like a lot of the vegan-friendly foods, yes, they took out meat, but they're loaded with so many additives and preservatives and, you know, processed oils and sugars that, you know, really you're better off just eating the meat. Now, I understand there's obviously an ethical component as well in terms and motivation for why people do it, but I think that's important for people to note, and especially people that do eat a plant-based diet that... Or if you eat an animal-based diet, it doesn't matter. Or if you have some sort of mix in between, that whole foods is important. And so I'd love if you could just, in your words, as quick of a summary as possible, what is it about processed foods? I mean, I know we can quickly talk about the, you know, the nutrient density and just the way they affect your body. But why is that so important for people to eat whole foods, whatever your diet is?
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of research, like the only diet that has the most research consistently on lowest morbidity, lowest mortality, so living longer, less chronic disease is Mediterranean diet. And the whole like concept with Mediterranean diet is whole foods. So processed foods, like you said, they're just low in nutritional value. Oftentimes they'll strip all the nutrients out of a food and then they'll add other nutrients, but they're not the same. Your body doesn't recognize them the same way they would as the nutrient in its actual form. Like that's not how we were kind of made to survive. And then the other thing with processed is that they will add so much salt and so much sugar to balance it out. But the amount of salt that they'll add to something processed with the amount of sugar, you can't really taste how salty it is. And for you to actually add that much salt to something you're cooking yourself or add that much sugar, it would be impossible. Like you wouldn't be able to eat it. So there's just so much other stuff. And then of course, all the additives, there's so much research on like nitrates, for example, like that are in a lot of those cured processed meats, just increasing risk of like different cancers in the intestinal tract. So, I mean, it's just a whole, in terms of research and in terms of just like eating things in their purest form, just whole foods is the way to go.
Right. I love that. I think one of the things that I've come across too, which is basically what you're saying, is some of the nutrients that we will get in processed forms aren't as bioavailable. Mm-hmm. So basically for people that don't know what that means is the idea that, yes, maybe you are taking some sort of, I don't know, pick any nutrient or vitamin you want, but that doesn't mean it's going to be absorbed as effectively or as readily into your body and therefore be utilized as something that came from a whole food source. So
even if all those cofactors, because you need like vitamins and minerals need other vitamins and minerals to be absorbed more easily. So if you're just taking a nutrient by itself, that doesn't always have the same effect. And it also depends on the specific person, specific situation, but.
Right. It's complicated as always, complicated. But I think the bottom line, at least from this point, is that if you eat whole foods, you are going to have a better nutrient profile that's going to be more bioavailable and support the processes that your body needs to undergo to be healthy. Whereas if you have a diet that is largely based in processed foods, you are probably going to be deficient in a lot of those key vitamins and minerals. And being deficient in one, like you said, because they are cofactors, could mean that another 100 cellular processes don't function properly. And then you end up with this whole web of issues, which ultimately we're trying to avoid. So anyways, that's enough about that. I want to now focus in on the juicy part of the conversation. This is something that I don't know much about, and I want to talk about hormones. And this is definitely an area of your expertise. But if you could, before we start talking specifically about female hormones, if you could just give a quick overlay, what are some of the key differences between male and female hormones? Mm-hmm. How do we need to look at this?
So male hormones are on a 24-hour pattern, whereas females are on like a monthly pattern. That's the biggest difference.
Perfect.
So for both men and women, cortisol is on the same pattern. So cortisol is a stress hormone. It's not a sex hormone, but I want to bring that up because that affects all of the other hormones. Cortisol should be highest at night when you first wake up. What stimulates cortisol in the morning is light and sunshine. So the first thing you want to do when you get up is like expose to some sort of sunshine, because that will bump cortisol levels up. Then it slowly goes down in the afternoon and then it drops at night. And that's what should keep you sleeping throughout the night. If your cortisol levels are imbalanced, oftentimes I'll see patients that say, I wake up at 3 to 4 every single night, or like they're always, the cortisol is just spiking in the middle of the night instead of the morning. Testosterone follows a similar pattern. It's highest in the morning, lower in the afternoon, then drops at night. And so men always have that kind of 24 hour where the testosterone is highest in the morning, then drops at night. Okay. Women, it's a whole monthly thing. So for the first kind of, and a kind of normal menstrual cycle could be anywhere from 21 to 35 days. The average is kind of 28 days. So if we look at ovulation, like day 1 to 14, day 1 is the first day of actually bleeding. So it's the first day of your period. That first 14 days or until you ovulate, the estrogen is slowly starting to increase up, and then it drops around ovulation. And then the next half of the cycle, the progesterone is highest.
Okay.
Yeah. And so there's a lot more like big fluctuations around ovulation and around like right before the menstrual period.
Right. So now when we recognize that it's not 24 hour clock that you're operating on for hormones, how do you go about then adapting
for stress hormones? You still are.
For sex hormones specifically. So how do you go about adapting your lifestyle to cater to that and to optimize how you define performance as a woman, knowing that you're going through these different phases? Because I'm thinking about a few examples that come to mind is when you have your hormones changing, everything from exercise, nutrition, how you're feeling, that all changes, and all of those lifestyle factors and all of those activities influence your hormones in one way or another. I don't really know how, but I know that everything is interconnected some way. So how do you go about understanding how to be aware of where you are in your cycle, how your hormones are affecting you, and what are ways to make the most of those periods? If that makes sense.
That makes sense. And that's actually, so there are people that specifically will look at, okay, so like, here's how you're feeling during the first half of your cycle. Here's how you're feeling during the second half of your cycle. But it's really, for me, from more of like a medical perspective, it's like the most change happens around ovulation and right before your period. So you should, like, women should be feeling good most of the month. There's times you're going to have less energy, times you're going to have a bit more energy. Like during the period, you're going to have less energy. So just doing more relaxing, nourishing activities at that time. Don't try and like do a huge project or launch something big. You're going to have more energy right before ovulation. Testosterone also kind of spikes around ovulation at that time as well. That's what increased libido around that time. And then kind of the second half of the cycle is when it's more just kind of, progesterone is more of our calming, relaxing, happy hormone. So that's, and again, another time just to be more do more kind of relaxing, nurturing activities. So that it's female hormones are so complicated, because I don't want to confuse this with people, because there's some people that'll say, okay, like you feel crappy before your period, so therefore you should not do anything before your period. But again, for me, it's like, well, why are you feeling crappy before your period? You shouldn't feel like you can't do anything before your period. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to just kind of blanket it like that. I know there are like some people that will, but for me, I can't really just say, like, it's not like cortisol, where most energy in the morning, most productive in the morning, less energy in the afternoon. So you should be doing more kind of mundane tasks in the afternoon. And then at night, like you should be sleeping, right?
Right.
Whereas men, it's pretty consistent pattern with that. And with women, we have the cortisol pattern like that. And then that will just, there will be other hormones that will affect how we're feeling throughout the month.
Right. So then one thing that I've thought about a lot is exercise and fitness. Mm-hmm. And so for me then, and as a man, having a 24-hour, let's say, testosterone cycle and cortisol cycle, mm-hmm. you know, you can see male athletes work out and exercise. Obviously, we will talk about balance. We don't want to overtrain, yeah. but they can be on a pretty consistent schedule of training, recovery. Now, if you have high performance female athletes, mm-hmm. whether we could be talking about anything from CrossFit Games or just to general fitness, do you then recommend that at times during ovulation that they tone down? Because does the body require more time to rest and recover to manage everything that it's dealing with? Like, I guess I'm trying to say, would it be more of a hindrance to try and maintain intensity levels throughout the entire month as a woman, as opposed to kind of catering the intensity of your exercise program to your cycle?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I honestly don't know the answer to that question. And I think it depends, just because I don't work with high performing athletes all the time, but I'm sure that there's women that focus in, like I do a lot more fertility and just like heavy periods, crampy periods, etc. But I'm sure like any time, so when the hormones are fluctuating so much, your liver has all this extra work to do to process those hormones. So that's going to affect everything else. So I would imagine that, yeah, you probably should be less intense during your period and less intense around ovulation or like right after ovulation. But I don't honestly know the answer to that question.
That's okay. That's perfectly fine. I have no idea. I figured I'd just take a shot in the dark.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. But in terms of high performance in general, I mean, a lot of high performing women who are over exercising, they will actually lose their periods, because what happens is for women, if cortisol levels are elevated, the enzymes that help produce progesterone, which is the hormone that causes the period to happen and helps hold pregnancies, the enzymes shift to help produce more cortisol, and the amount of progesterone decreases. So they actually will lose their periods often.
Wow. And so this is where we come back to your idea of reverse engineering issues. So when mm-hmm. you're looking at the female sex hormones, how often do you find that issues with the menstrual cycle are actually caused by other lifestyle issues where, you know, it goes all back to, you know, maybe you are too stressed, or maybe you have something going on, and that's more of an issue than, okay, then let's look at your birth control, or let's try and get you on more hormone medication. Let's say, wait a minute, why is that? So what are some of the leading causes that you see in women that end up leading to downstream sex hormone issues?
Yeah, stress is the main one.
Okay, stress, perfect.
Stress, diet, lifestyle. So the biggest things I see, so the most common kind of hormone imbalance is estrogen being too high compared to progesterone. And when women have estrogen too high compared to progesterone, they'll get a lot of cramping, a lot of spotting before the period, really heavy periods. Like skin outbreaks, those are kind of the most common symptoms. But the common causes of those symptoms are that stress, like the cortisol being too high, and that decreasing the amount of progesterone that's being made, and then diet and lifestyle, which the lifestyle usually comes back to that stress piece. But diet is a huge part of that as well, because a common thing I see, and I was saying this when you were talking about the veganism, is that because I have a lot of women that come to see me that are vegan, or just women in general that are having hormone issues, they're not getting enough protein and enough protein with each meal. And protein keeps blood sugar really stable. And if blood sugar is not stable, that again affects cortisol, and that will affect how all the rest of your hormones are functioning.
I just want to stop and take a second. I almost think I need to make this massive chart. If I were to take this episode that we've done today and have a big whiteboard, it would just be circles and arrows pointed to all sorts of different things. It just, everything's connected. It just looks like some big
I can send you the hormone chart that I love to show. They're always like, oh my God, I don't want to see that. But there's like huge hormone charts that you look at how everything is all connected. But honestly, the reason why I love talking about HPA axis dysregulation and burnout, especially like for everyone, especially high performers, is that that is the number one cause I see of all other imbalances in the system. I mean, of course, there's genetic factors, but even with epigenetics, I mean, the amount of stress and what you're eating and doing can affect those genes.
Right,
so,
exactly. I mean,
there's so many different factors, but chronic stress is the biggest, the number one thing I see in my practice of almost every issue that I see.
Yeah. And albeit difficult, that is something that we have control over. So there are mechanisms and modalities and lifestyle choices that we can make to manage that stress. I mean, we can't just automatically turn up our progesterone or just say like, you know what, like let's tone down the estrogen today. Like we can't do that, but we can control what we do. So, and just before we talk a little bit more then about how you can do that and kind of some of the lifestyle habits that you employ, I need just a little bit more of a primer. If you could give me a quick primer on what are the key functions behind progesterone and estrogen.
Yeah.
And just because I don't know if that kind of came up and maybe I just missed that, but I'm still a little hazy on what their roles are. Okay.
Okay. Let me, hold on. I want to see if I can find a piece of paper. I'm going to show you right here.
Oh, good. We got a free lesson here. This is great.
Yeah.
Okay. Because do you have this question a lot? Do you find that a lot of people misunderstand the role of hormones and what they do?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's hard. Hormones are like being in school. Like, oh, my God. So this is just like a very basic chart. But basically, in the first half of your cycle, I don't know if you can see the different colors, but this black, this is your estrogen. So the first half of your cycle, your estrogen is what's most predominant. Okay. Estrogen helps thicken the uterine lining. So basically for women, sorry, women, but the whole purpose of our hormones is to get pregnant. That's the whole purpose. That's just what we're designed for. It's just a fact. It's not saying anything negative about anyone or anything. It's just a fact. Yeah. Estrogen is designed to thicken the urine lining. Progesterone is designed to hold the pregnancy, to keep the hormone stable. So the dropping of progesterone is what causes the uterine lining to shed. So estrogen thickens uterine lining, progesterone causes uterine lining to shed. So back to this image. So estrogen is increasing the first half of your cycle. And then this increase in estrogen and then the drop stimulates LH and FSH, which is luteinizing hormone, follicular stimulating hormone, which is what causes us to ovulate. The interesting thing is that an egg for women will last 24 hours, whereas sperm can survive around that fertile time for like 5 days in the vaginal canal.
Wow.
So basically in terms of fertility, you're most fertile the few days before ovulation and one day after ovulation.
Right,
and then
okay.
in the second half of your cycle, this green line, that's when your progesterone starts to increase. So the hormones are the most stable kind of mid-luteal, which is like if day one is first day of your cycle, mid-luteal would be around like day, you know, like 19 to 22 if you had a 28-day cycle. And so progesterone, like I said, is what helps like maintain the uterine lining. So if you're pregnant, the progesterone will just keep going up. If you don't get pregnant, it'll fall. And that's what causes uterine lining to shed. So that's why if you're suppressing progesterone, you don't have enough for it to fall properly to cause uterine lining to shed and you won't have a period. And that's what happens with athletes.
Oh, okay. So that's kind of what I was trying to figure out is what is then the cause. So then if you see people that don't have a proper or I don't want to say proper, but perhaps a regular 28-day cycle, how much of that then is because of the sex hormones being dysregulated? And then how much of that is from everything else and the other hormones causing dysregulation. So is that really what's going on when people say, I don't have a regular period, which I feel like is very, very common for women. Does this all trace back then to,
you know,
obviously there's a lot of steps along the way, but.
Yeah. If women don't have a regular period, there's something going on with their sex hormones. Okay. And like I said, typically progesterone is too low. Estrogen is too high. That's not always the case. And it doesn't even need to be estrogen too high, just estrogen too high relative to the progesterone.
Right. It's the relationship between them. It's the relationship. It's between the two hormones and the balance.
Yeah. Because they play off each other. And then the other thing that I see too is that like a really common irregular period situation is PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, where women have their testosterone's too high in addition to progesterone being too low. And those women will usually have less than like 7 or 8 periods a year. Like they'll be really, really long. They'll tend to have more of that kind of male pattern acne around the jawline. They'll have cysts on their ovaries sometimes, but the diagnostic criteria has changed, so not always. And they'll have a lot of those low progesterone symptoms. And progesterone also converts to GABA. And GABA is one of our calming, relaxing neurotransmitters. So if progesterone's low, I often will see anxiety, insomnia before the period because that GABA is not where it needs to be.
Okay. I did not know that about progesterone being related to GABA. And
yeah,
is that then, I mean, obviously, so we, you know, sex hormones are present in men and women, obviously in different levels. So does that, any of this still hold true for men as well in terms of GABA production, balancing sex hormones, or maybe testosterone has its own set of
Influencing cortisol factors? Will suppress testosterone. So if your cortisol levels are too high, your testosterone will be suppressed. Testosterone is what gives men a lot of energy, like motivation, clarity. Those are kind of testosterone, irritability. Those are kind of testosterone characteristics. If cortisol is too high, testosterone is too low, the estrogen in men can start creeping up as well. And that will cause a lot of that, like beer belly, low motivation, low libido, et cetera. So it does affect it. It's just a little bit different. Like progesterone does have a role to play in terms of men's health, but it's less. So the most common reasons men come to see me are for anxiety, for like immune support or recovery after like a surgery or after an injury. And what's the last one? Hold on. I wrote it down because I was thinking about this morning. Like, what are the most common reasons? And high blood pressure, cholesterol. And those all relate. I mean, that can relate to estrogen as well, but usually it comes back to, for men, like focusing on the cortisol production and the sympathetic nervous system and not directly targeting like progesterone, estrogen, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay. But either way, for all people at the end of the day, we need to be very conscientious of our cortisol levels and our stress. Yes. So that's kind of the base one to bring it back home. So with that, I would love to just have you share some of the things that you do on a daily basis or, you know, incorporate into your lifestyle to help you balance your hormones and find balance in your life and optimize everything. I know you are in the thick of nature. You get outside all the time. I think I see all the time on your Instagram, your stories, you guys out snowshoeing or skiing or something. So maybe that's part of it. But if you don't mind sharing with the viewers, you know, just what are some things that a naturopathic physician and expert does to optimize her own hormone balance?
So being, and I wrote some down here just so I remember, but being strict around my boundaries about time off. So I try, and like, I'm not perfect. Sometimes I work too much, but I try and really be mindful of my schedule and about when I'm starting to feel a little bit stressed out or overwhelmed, because I mean, I was totally burnt out in school and that messes with everything else in your body. So being really mindful about time off and making sure I'm taking time off. So every day I make sure that Gabe and I sit down together, we eat together, like making sure I'm sitting down, being present, mindful when I'm eating, making sure I'm spending time with loved ones, making sure that I'm, like I said, closing my work down at certain times, getting out in nature every day. That's huge. Like there's a lot of research on this, but the biggest benefit of being out in nature is it puts everything into perspective. So if you're going for a walk in the forest, all of a sudden, all of these, like these little tiny issues that came up that to you seem like such huge issues at the time, when you're outside, you're like, oh, I'm just like this tiny being like in the universe. So this actual problem that I thought was a crisis doesn't actually matter that much.
Right.
It just like forces you to go back and just reflect on the, like everything. The other thing I do is like literally like I have a reminder set on my computer to practice gratitude. So every day I make sure I just in my head, just go through, okay, what am I grateful for? Because a lot of people miss that and they're not like, if I'm just sitting on the couch in my house, I like look around, like I'm so grateful that I live here in this town that I love, like that we have a house, like I'm grateful that I have all these things. And it's just so important to constantly be reminding yourself of what you're grateful for. And like, there's a whole other path we can go on that, but the what you focus on in terms of your brain space is what you're going to create more neuronal pathways on. And that's what your brain is automatically going to start doing more. So if you focus more on the negative, your brain's going to start creating, like, it's just going to be easier for you to think negative thoughts. So if you're focusing more on the positive, it's going to be easier for you to start thinking positive thoughts. And then the other thing that supplements, I do think I always make jokes with patients. I mean, if we could all just like move to Hawaii and like grow our own foods and like did not have to stress, then probably most people wouldn't need supplements. But the reality is we're still in a time where we do need to work to make money to actually just survive. So I do think having supplements and something, my main ones are cortisol support. So I like using some herbs to balance cortisol. Exactly. I use that and I use another. I use two different adrenal support ones. And then I like using magnesium at night to help calm the nervous system down. Magnesium is one of those nutrients that we don't get enough of.
Magnesium here too. Yeah. I don't know if it's a good form. Yeah. I got it.
Glycinate, I usually recommend, is the best one.
Okay.
Yeah, there's different forms for different things, but bisglycinate tends to be more, or glycinate, more easily absorbed by the system. And then batching my time is another huge one. And something I think I'm kind of obsessed with being efficient, because I think you could waste a lot of time doing things and not doing them efficiently. And if you're doing that, you're just wasting a lot of time that you could be doing other things. So I try and batch my time. So I see patients in this chunk of time. I do other office work this chunk of time. I'm always kind of reassessing and shifting my schedule based on what, like how I'm feeling. So
I love that. Those are honestly amazing answers.
Yeah.
The efficiency comes to mind because I just recorded an interview last week with one of my good friends and mentors. And that interview, I think, is going to come out on February 2nd. So this will be before this interview comes out.
Yeah.
And his key to high performance was efficiency. If you can become ultra efficient, you open up time and energy.
Yep.
And so I love that. But I also love how you brought gratitude in. And this was a huge shift in my life this year. I really, I basically neglected gratitude my whole life. And it wasn't until I had a chance with the pandemic to slow down and to just sit outside in nature and to read and kind of reflect on my life and what's most important, that you begin to practice gratitude. And then I started doing a gratitude journal. So every morning and every night, I write my gratitude journal, things I'm grateful for, positive affirmations. And it is like you're saying, you know, there is this wonderful thing called neuroplasticity where our brain is malleable. We can change it and we can create and manifest our thoughts and our attitudes in this life just by, you know, repeating and rewiring our brain. Yeah. So I'm so glad that you touched on that. And I think a lot of people, and I know myself for the longest time, assume that if I wanted to optimize my life, I would have to do all of these crazy, crazy things or get all this crazy, crazy medical interventions. But it can be very simple. Simple things, go outside in nature, you know, get some fresh air, be grateful for who you are, allocate time to yourself and to your loved ones. You know, even that can go a long way. So
take time to rest, eat whole foods. That's literally like, that's it.
That's it, right? And people don't want that answer because they always hear that answer. They want the quick response. But at the end of the day, it is that systems approach to natural living, right? Yeah. Live longer, better. Live better, longer. So before we close off here, I would love for you to share about your company, Enliven Naturals here, your supplement company, and also your practice with the Natural Path Clinic in Rosslyn, BC. And also you are a business consultant. You help wellness providers, social media. If you could just talk about everything you do, where people can get in touch with you, where they can learn more, because I think a lot of people could really benefit from the stuff you're doing.
Yeah, totally. So Enliven Naturals, that was actually a company that I founded because a lot of people were coming in with, like I said, kind of throughout this whole thing, the most common cause of chronic disease is chronic stress. So like if there's one supplement I give to everyone, it would be something for stress. And that particular product is more, because there's different types of stress supplements. So if someone tells you a supplement's going to work for everyone, that's not true. Like that's not the way that like everyone's individual, right? But for most people with anxiety, I was using a similar formula at my clinic and tons of people like that one. So I was like, okay, how can I bring this to more people that are feeling burnt out, anxious, overwhelmed, having a hard time sleeping based on a product that I actually have like years of experience using in clinic. And I know works for most people with those symptoms. People would keep coming to the clinic with just things that they bought at the health food store, which not poo-pooing on health food stores, but they're often not standardized extracts, which means that you're not actually getting that consistent result each time. And you're actually getting that, the potency that you could get. So you need to take a lot more. And then other things too, they're not as heavily, kind of tested. So professional grade supplements are tested to make sure more frequently to make sure that whatever they say is in there is actually in there. And it's not just a substitute herb that looks similar. So that, and then also organic, like there's not a lot, that one doesn't say organic on there because when it's a standardized extract, you can't claim that it's organic, but it is from organic sustainable sources. So that was also something really important to me. So that is where that kind of came from. And there's a lot of actually exciting changes coming down the pipe with Enliven. So I'm excited to keep you posted.
Please do.
Yes. I'll tell you, there's some secrets coming, but we have some new business partners coming on. So yeah, it'll be good. I'm excited.
Amazing. Okay. So, and then what about, obviously not everyone is going to be in Rosslyn, BC. It is a small place, but I know that you have some online consultation and services. So maybe we could talk about how you can help people that are listening to this and say, wait a minute, I would really love to pick Amanda's brain and I need some help. I have XYZ issues.
Yes.
How can they get in touch with you with that?
So especially since COVID, so many of the naturopathic regulations have changed. And this is the one big thing about naturopathic medicine is we're so like tightly regulated. There's a lot of things we cannot do or say. So if someone is just saying random things and saying they're naturopath and they can cure you of like whatever, they're probably not an actual naturopathic physician that is being regulated. So the reason I bring this up is it used to be the case that I could actually see patients outside of my province as long as I was treating them within their provincial guidelines. But now our college has said no. So I can only treat patients that are in BC.
Oh, darn. Oh, no.
And so that's why I started doing more group programs. So I really like the group aspect and everyone learning from each other. But again, I have to now keep that to BC. So I have a hormone harmony course that that people can do. And it basically like really like deep dives into hormones, figuring out what's going on with your hormones, why it's happening, and what to do about it, like what I do with patients in my clinic. So that's a course that people can buy. But in terms of working with me personally, I can only work with people that are in BC, which is too bad. But that's just kind of the regulations right now.
Okay, that is too bad. Yeah. But at the very least, I encourage everyone to check out that clinic. And then that would be at, I believe it's the naturopath.ca website. Did I get that right? Okay, so I will put all those links, of course, in the show notes for the podcast, as well as on my website. So I'll make sure people can get in touch with you. And on social media, where can we find you?
So for like clinic hormone information, be at the naturopath. And the reason actually why the business consulting came about is people were asking me when the pandemic happened, because a lot of businesses experienced kind of financial strain during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I was already starting to create these online programs. So I was lucky that was kind of when the clinic was like a little bit up and down, because normally it's just like really booked. But you know, everyone was uncertain at that time. And then I had that kind of extra financial cushion from the online program. So practitioners are reaching out. I'm like, well, how can I do that? Like, I know that I have all this information to offer. So that's what the business consulting came about. So for people that are looking, that are wellness providers and want to learn how to kind of diversify their income streams to protect themselves in situations like this, that's at Dr. Amanda Shea, Chay.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So and people for the business consulting at Dr. Amanda Shea and Instagram, is that the best way?
Yeah.
Okay. And then
Instagram is where I spend the most time. So.
Okay. Instagram. Yeah. Me too. I like Instagram. And then at the naturopath, if you're looking for more.
I think it's just hold on. Let me just check here.
Okay. Yeah. I think I am following you as well. I haven't.
Yeah. I mean, at first it started out my Dr. Manashe was for clinic stuff. And then I decided to switch it to the, I had so many other practitioners following me. Oh, sorry. It's Naturopath Clinic.
Naturopath Clinic. Okay. Yeah. And again, I'll put those links where everyone can find them. So we can hopefully get as many people in touch with you. And then I think this has been super, super helpful, and perhaps we'll have to have a part two sometime to go into detail.
Totally.
Once I do some more research and I actually know what I'm trying to ask questions about. But to close off, I would love if you could just give people one general piece of advice to optimize your health, one piece of advice to optimize your happiness, and one piece for your performance.
Okay. So I wrote these down again. So optimize health, eat more whole foods, like just focus on eating whole foods. Like do not focus. A big thing I see is people will get all these like crazy protein shakes and have all these vitamins, minerals, just eat whole foods. Like my typical diet is an egg with salad for breakfast. A protein with like a bit of a grain, a salad for lunch, and then like some sort of, again, protein grain salad for dinner. So it's not like, it doesn't have to be really hardcore. It's just like eat whole foods and then you'll feel better. For optimizing happiness, just taking more time off to enjoy being in the here and now. And like I said, even for some people, I will make it so tiny. So just like, if you're feeling stressed out, just set your alarm on your phone for 5 minutes from now and just sit and do nothing. Like that is the best way to calm your nervous system down, to tell your body that you're safe. And then if your nervous system's calm, you're going to feel more happy because you're going to be producing more of those happy hormones. So that would be the biggest thing for that. And optimizing performance. I kind of wrote three down. Sorry.
Perfect. But no, that's great.
Batching your time, increasing efficiency, and then outsourcing. I guess also having a mentor. Like the two biggest changes I made in my business were having a mentor to help me, so I didn't have to figure everything out by myself. They're like, I already have done this. This is how you can streamline that, and that helps you become more efficient. And then outsourcing. Like there's so many things that people waste a lot of time on that they could easily outsource, and they're like, oh, that's too expensive. But if you think about the time versus, like, if you can actually just deliver services that, like, for example, for the clinic, like if I'm seeing patients, but I can hire out some other tasks for, you know, like $20 or $30 an hour that still maximizes my time that I can see patients, if that makes sense. So
right.
So
yeah, exactly.
Just thinking about things in a different way.
Yeah. Time valuing is important. Yeah. So like you said, just for a very basic example, not saying this is your clinic, but let's say, for example, someone can make $50 an hour doing their work, but yeah. they spend all of their time doing these tedious tasks. Well, if you can pay someone $30 an hour to do that work and you yeah. can keep doing the $50 an hour work, yes, exactly. you're still going to be in the green. You know, exactly. at the end of the day, even yeah. though you might be kicking yourself, just like, oh, you know, I'm throwing away money, but you are making more money with yeah. the time you have. So,
and you'll be less stressed. So you'll be happy.
And you'll be less stressed and you'll be happier and you'll be yeah. making more of an impact. Everything is better.
Yeah. I have a friend that said you can always get money back, but you can never get your time back. And that's something I always think about whenever I'm thinking about outsourcing. It's like, no, like this is a good investment because then I have my own time.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm never gonna be able to get back.
Right. And your balance
yeah.
and
yeah.
everything. Right. Yeah, so
exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Amanda, for taking the time. I loved catching up with you
yeah,
and
I know,
learning nice about chat. All of these great topics and questions. And you've got my mind spinning. My brain hamster is going 100 miles an hour right now, trying to yeah. process everything still. So I hope the listeners got a ton of information out of this and a ton of value. I think it is terrific stuff. And I love what you're doing. And I'm excited to keep following along.
Thank you. Yeah.
That you're doing in the future.
I'm pumped for you and what you're doing and having all these awesome people on your podcast. This is great. Like, yeah, it's so good. So congratulations. And yeah, let's do this another time soon. And if you have any questions after what we chatted about, like don't hesitate, obviously, to just
yeah.
send me a voice message on Instagram.
I think they're going to come up when I re-listen to and go through editing. And all of a sudden I have yeah. all the little thought bubbles popping. The light bulbs, they weren't working fast enough during the call, but they'll definitely go off when I can pause and process the information properly. But thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
To discover more, this episode with all citations is available on the website. And you can also contact me on social media with any questions or comments. If you found this episode useful, or think that it may help someone else, I encourage you to pass it along. Thank you all for joining me on this journey to lifelong health, happiness, and higher performance. And remember, always be grateful, love yourself, and serve others.